So I want to talk about some recent work on understanding the systematics of n equals 2 superconformal field theories in four dimensions. Some work that I did with Seiberg and Wittig just in the past few months, and I'll also report on some work in progress. So first, for the motivation, or what the talk's going to be about, I just want to try to talk a little bit about how we would go about sort of exploring the space of n equals 2 superconformal field theories systematically. Why? Well, that's really what this talk is meant to convince you, that if this is something worth doing. I think there are many things that can be learned in this way. And the methods that we use are going to be, for the most part of the talk, I'll just talk about purely field theoretic methods. I won't talk about string constructions except for a little bit at the end. So it's the usual story. We just use selection rules from n equals 2 supersymmetry and Ward identities, and then probe the theories sort of indirectly by looking at the behavior of their low energy effective actions as a function of the moduli of the position on the vacuum manifold of the theories. That's Seiberg-Witten theory. And also, we have to use a bit of representation theory of n equals 2 superconformal algebras as well. So in the end, the actual computations we do when they're in Seiberg-Witten theory are basically all just reduced to some questions in algebraic geometry, that is to say, manipulations of complex polynomials. And it's pretty technical, and I'll just try to skip over try to stay away from the technical details of the algebraic geometry and just give you the physical ideas. So here's the outline. I'm going to start with a very brief review of n equals 2 supersymmetry, which mostly is just to make sure we're speaking the same language. Then I'll talk about marginal deformations of conformal fixed points, and some recent results on the computation of certain central charges in the operator algebra of the conformal field theories. And then I'll talk a little bit about some relevant deformations and some puzzles that have arisen there. And finally, I will talk at the end a little bit about string realizations of some of these new phenomena. So the main tool we use, as I said before, is that we probe these theories by looking on their on the dependence of low energy effective theories on the moduli space. The idea is all the superconformal field theories, or at least the interacting superconformal fixed points we know about in n equals 2, all have moduli space vacua parameterized by some BEVs of scalar chiral multiplets. If you're close to a conformal point, this space of vacua, they all look very simple. They're just a cone. This is my pathetic attempt to draw a cone. So you can think of the superconformal theory living at the apex of that cone. Really, what this is, of course, is a description of the vacuum manifold of the whole superconformal theory. Turning on the BEV U spontaneously breaks the conformal indifference. On this vacuum, if it's an R complex dimensional space, there'll be an unbroken U1 to the R low energy gauge symmetry. So it's called a Coulomb branch. And we'll just call the rank of a superconformal field theory by this dimension R of its Coulomb branch. It's a rank, even though the superconformal field theory may have no, you know, Lagrangian notion of a gauge theory underlying it. No gauge group necessarily. Okay. So That's only sort of half the story. When we're also interested in the RG flows between the superconformal points. So here's some picture of some of theory space in n equals two field theories. And the black dots here are the superconformal points. Each black dot now represents the conformal point plus its whole moduli space of vacua. And then by turning on relevant operators at some conformal point, we flow down to other conformal points. And sometimes we flow down to whole spaces of conformal points which are continuously connected, which is just to say every point on this manifold here are themselves superconformal theories, and a coordinate on this space is just what you would call an exactly marginal coupling, okay? Often a gauge coupling in a Lagrangian theory. Okay? There's nothing special, so to speak, about these points, these two black dots I put at either end of this manifold. Every point here is a superconformal point, and then you can have various flows. Okay? So the complex geometry of the space of marginal couplings is what's known as S-duality. If you think about it in an invariant way, the statement of, you know, S-duality, strong, weak coupling duality, and so forth, is no more or less than just this, than just the description of the complex geometry of the space of couplings. So a question that you want to know is, you know, how do we characterize the set of marginal operators of various field theories? If I have a conformal field theory with no marginal operators, we just call it an isolated conformal field theory. Okay? So all the rank one superconformal field theories in n equals two using the Seiberg-Witten type techniques have been classified. They happen to coincide with the Kodaira classification, which is something like a certain ADE classification, which we'll talk about later. Okay. So let me motivate what I'm going to do with a couple of old questions. So in n equals four Yang-Mills theory, we're familiar with all of Montanan duality or S-duality, which you can think of as answering the question as what happens to the theory. These theories all have, they're Lagrangian theories, they all have an exactly marginal gauge coupling, and you can take the gauge coupling continuously to infinite coupling, and you can ask what happens. But what you find is that there's a set of identifications on this is the complex plane of couplings, weak coupling up here, the real axis would be the infinite coupling limit. But you find that there are a set of identifications, namely SL2Z set of identifications, and so there is no such thing as infinite coupling. If you try to go to infinite coupling, it's just identified back again with weak coupling. And that's the story for all the theories, for the n equals four theories. But it's not the story for the n equals two theories. So for an example, it just so happened that the SU2 theory with four doublets that Seiberg and Witten originally solved for also had an SL2Z S-duality group. They had a space of marginal couplings which was bounded away from infinite coupling. But that turns out, it just so happens that's actually kind of the exception in the n equals two theories. Most n equals two theories actually have a space of marginal couplings which contain these infinite coupling points. Infinite coupling should be taken. It is just a descriptive term. There's nothing really, the value of the coupling is itself not actually a physically meaningful thing. What this really means is that there's a limit, a weak coupling limit, in which a certain set of states in the theory are becoming massless, and we recognize this as a weak coupling limit. There's another limit where you have a whole set of states becoming massless everywhere on the Coulomb branch. So there's another interesting or sort of singular limit of the theory. It's easy to check in this case that it's not the weak coupling limit of any Lagrangian theory. And so there's been a question, what's going on here? What's this new kind of singular limit of field theories? So this has been a question, or was a question for a long time. I'd also,
So I know the low energy effective action on the Coulomb branch as a function of this parameter tau. And so I can compare, I can look to see what it looks like in this limit. And it does not look like the low energy effective action of any Lagrangian theory. It's gross, not like there's a picture. I don't know if I commented it out. No, I didn't comment it out. Here we go. For example, if you were talking about a rank two theory, if you're going to the weak coupling limit,
this is the kind of degeneration of the Seiberg-Witten curve, and you need this would be. But this is like the SU3 theory, and each of these corresponds to a W boson becoming massless. And so you need the six gauge bosons together with the two U1s to fill out the SU3 group. What happens at the so-called infinite coupling point is a degeneration like this, which just doesn't have enough, so to speak, gauge bosons to fill out any classical gauge group. That's the sort of that's kind of a somewhat descriptive way of saying that it's just not a Lagrangian limit of a theory. So, a second puzzle, which is seemingly unrelated, is that in this Kodaira ADE classification, there were the three E6, E7, and E8 so-called isolated rank one superconformal field theories. And all the other ones in the list had been found as within field theory. That is to say, you could find some asymptotically free theory and then tube parameters and flow down so you hit all of the other isolated conformal fixed points, except for these EN guys. But they had only been constructed actually through string theory techniques. People found them by taking certain, little string theories in six dimensions and appropriately compactifying them, and you found that they flowed there. And that was the evidence for the existence of these theories. And so the question is are they embedded in any way within four-dimensional field theories? So I wouldn't put this question on the same slide as this one unless it so happened that these are, in some sense, the answer to each other. So here's the idea. I'll just sort of state our proposed answer. What we want to say is that infinite coupling limit of our Lagrangian field theory, like SU3 with six triplets or something like that, I already said that it's not the weakly coupled limit of a purely Lagrangian theory, but it sort of, in that limit, it factorizes into two pieces. One piece is a weakly coupled Lagrangian piece. So if this is going to infinite coupling, this one's going to weak coupling. But the piece that remains is one of these isolated superconformal field theories, which doesn't have a marginal operator, just has a kind of a coupling which is fixed. So, you need the ranks to work out. So if this one was a rank R, then the sum of the ranks of these two theories must add up to R. So the question is, as I turn on this coupling, I have to turn on some, as I move away from weak coupling in this gauge theory, this isn't just a simple product of two theories. I need to have some coupling between them. And the natural way to couple them, of course, is that this conformal field theory will have some global symmetry group, a flavor algebra or something like this, and I can gauge this subgroup of the flavor group. So in other words, as far as this field theory goes, I can think of the conformal field theory as acting as a source of some matter charged under the gauge group. So all I'm saying is I take a Lagrangian theory and I go to the infinite coupling limit. It's another gauge theory. And it has a sort of a strange sort of matter. It might have the usual free matter, hypermultiplets, but in addition, it might have these fixed points, these non-trivial conformal field theories as matter as well. Of course, for this to work, this matter has to be just have the right properties such that it contributes to the beta function of under this G twiddle group, just so that this coupling is marginal, because we know that there's a marginal coupling in the whole theory. That's the idea.
Knows that it's weakly coupling, say the gauged part of the flavor symmetry. How do you know that it will be weakly coupled?
Well, this is a proposal for what happens there, and we have to check it in cases. This is a strong weak. This proposal is making an assertion about what happens at strong coupling in the gauge theory and relating it to weak coupling here. I have no direct way of proving this assertion, but because I can compute lots of things exactly for all values of the coupling, mostly the low energy theory, BPS spectra, stuff like that, I can compare the two and accumulate evidence in this way. I'll try to give you a flavor of the kind of evidence we have. I think the evidence is now overwhelming that this is incorrect.
And the big CFT, it doesn't have marginal operators.
Right. That's what fix means here. An isolated, as I said, conformal field theory. If it had a marginal operator and a couple to this, so that it had a marginal operator, the whole theory would have two marginal operators. And so this would have to be not. I could have such a thing, but this gauge group would have had to be semi-simple with two simple factors. Both being scaled here. I'll give some examples like that also later. Okay.
So that's the idea. And then the question is just how you can adduce evidence to check this idea. But I hope I'm making it seem like a natural idea. Given this existence of these sort of given that we know of the existence of isolated conformal field theories in with n equals 2 supersymmetry, remember, they're a kind of gauge theory. They have a rank. When you turn on the VEV, they break down to U1 theories. So I should kind of think of these as a gauge theory, but they also have some global flavor symmetries, and I can weakly gauge those global flavor symmetries. And if I gauge, so to speak, the right subgroup and maybe add in the right extra amount of matter here, I can arrange it so that this gauging is actually this gauge parameter is exactly marginal, that I've canceled the beta function. Okay? So I hope it should seem reasonable that I can do this. And so I can build a new set of non-Lagrangian theories. I mean, they have sort of a Lagrangian sector and a sector we don't know how to describe in a Lagrangian term, but with a marginal coupling. And then I can take this coupling strong and ask what happens. And the answer is that, at least in some cases, it becomes a purely weakly coupled Lagrangian theory and vice versa. There might be other answers as well. In fact, as I'll mention towards the end of the talk, Justin Vasquez-Peritz and I have examples where we have a theory like this at weak coupling, and then we take this coupling strong, and it becomes another theory like this at its weak coupling with maybe a different gauge group and a different conformal field theory. So there's no reason that when I look at what I'm doing here, of course, is just looking at the space of couplings, and I'm looking at various points where there are complex singularities on this space and asking, those are what I'm kind of calling my weak or my infinite coupling points. And I'm just asking, what kind of descriptions do I have of the physics there? And sometimes, like in all of Montanan duality in n equals 4, all the weak coupling points have Lagrangian descriptions. All these singularities have Lagrangian descriptions. And I've just described cases where you have a purely Lagrangian, and then this funny thing where you've coupled a weakly coupled Lagrangian piece to an isolated conformal fixed point. But there are other ones where all the singularities on the moduli space have only these kind of non-Lagrangian theories with marginal couplings. I think it should be clear that, or hopefully it's convincing, that there's nothing to rule out such things occurring, and so we sort of expect them to happen. So as I just, I guess, pointed out, this in some sense generalizes all of Montanan duality in n equals 4 to some, it sort of enriches it so that we have an enlarged notion of S duality applying to n equals 2 theories. Okay. So I already said we can't prove this. We can only deduce evidence. You can look at the low energy effective actions, the Seiberg-Witten curves, and you can also just look at the global symmetry groups. So maybe I'll just go back and point out how that would work here. This has some global symmetry group. I've gauged a subgroup of it. So what's left over, so the gauge part isn't the global symmetry group of the whole theory once I turn on this gauge coupling, but what's left over, technically the commutant of G twiddle in the flavor algebra of the conformal field theory, is the global symmetry of the theory with the gauge coupling turned on. Well, the global symmetry is the global symmetry. It should also be the global symmetry on the left-hand side. This actually provides very tight constraints on the model. So, specific example. So, here's the simplest example. This is the one worked out in some detail in my paper with Maddie. Take the SU3 theory with 6 fundamental hypermultiplets. That is a scale invariant theory. What it has an infinite coupling limit. In the infinite coupling limit, it becomes an SU2 theory with a single doublet hypermultiplet coupled to the so-called E6 rank 1 superconformal field theory. That one of those things in the Kodaira classification. And the SU2 is gauging a certain SU2 subgroup of the E6 flavor symmetry. And in fact, if you look in the tables, SU2 cross SU6 is a maximal subalgebra of E6. That's a better way of saying it's SU6 is a commutant of a certain SU2 in E6. And that's the one that you can work out is precisely the subgroup that's being gauged. And so you're left with an SU6 global flavor symmetry. If you look over here on the SU3 theory, you can ask, what is its global flavor symmetry? Well, there's 6 complex representations, so it has a U6 flavor symmetry. That's a U1 cross an SU6. Here's the SU6, and the U1 was realized on this side because we had a single pseudo-real a single pseudo-real, which gives us an SO2 or U1 flavor symmetry here. So there's the U1 from here, an SU6 as the commutant of SU2 and E6, and they fill out the U6 here.
Become light, right? So which states become light?
The W bosons of the SU2 theory. Remember, as the coupling of this SU3 theory.
Right, so what are they
infinite, the coupling of this, in this description, the coupling of this gauge factor is becoming weak. And then it's.
So do they have this group in terms of the original?
Yeah, so what's the connection between this gauge group and this gauge group? Well, it's not simple. In fact, in this particular example, we gave some evidence that the W bosons with respect to this SU2 are magnetically charged under the SU3.
So they're just magnetically charged, they're not diamonds.
I think they're just magnetically charged. They look like magnetic molecules, like that. Looking at the spectrum and comparing the spectrum, what you can say is very little work has been done on that. It's something that you can carry out. The only problem, of course, is that you have to ask yourself, as when you're sort of following the spectrum from point to point, as you're changing the marginal couplings, is there an analog of curves of marginal stability in the space of marginal couplings, just as there was in just as there is on the Coulomb branch? Well, that's kind of a technical question. I'm not sure of the answer to that.
Something is probably related to what you just mentioned. So precisely at the infinite coupling of SU3, then the SU2 factor has zero coupling.
Right.
Okay, so, and so in principle, the theories could be different. They're just the same at this fixed point, right? The this infinitely coupled SU3 is the same as zero coupled SU2 with an isolated CFT, but in principle, that's another difficulty. They might be just different as you start deforming them by relevant operators, so they could look completely different.
By relevant operators? I'm a little confused.
In principle, those are just fixed points. So I'm saying that the set of, well, you mapped also relevant operators of one T. I don't think that the relevant operators of SU3 would be the same as the relevant operators. Otherwise, that would be the same series, and they are not.
In fact, this picture sort of tries to illustrate that a little bit,
okay,
in the sense that here's a set of theories connected by a marginal, exactly marginal coupling. But the deformations at one point don't have to be look exactly like the deformations at the other. There can be sort of, that's what these black dots are really supposed to represent. There can be complex sub-varieties in this manifold that if you have a qualitatively different sort of pattern of marginal.
It's really in the sense of just a dual description of the fixed point.
That's right. So there are many more examples, and I'll show them to you in a second. And that one I've already told you about, things being magnetically charged. So here are a set of examples that came from just doing a quick scan. Well, not, maybe not so quick, but it turns out that just using the group theory stuff plus some constraints on central charges, which I'll talk about in a minute, you can go through the list of, say, relatively low-rank Lagrangian conformal field theories and ask about whether it's consistent that they have these types of duals at strong coupling without doing all the work of looking at the details of the Seiberg-Witten curves, which are not known for most of these. There's only a small subset of these for which we have the full control over the low-energy effective action. So scanning through them, you find many examples. As you should have expected, what we're saying is, you know, there's this thing in brackets is a description of the conformal field theory. Look at this. This is the E7 conformal field theory. And once we figured out how it contributes to the beta function, then we just figured there should be various different subgroups of the E7 that you can gauge. And if you put in appropriate matter to make them, to make those these couplings marginal, so these become nice scale invariant theories, and then they should be dual to some other theories. And in some cases, not all cases, like I said, they'll be dual to purely Lagrangian theories, and here we've worked them out. And here on the bottom half are an example of sets. These are theories which happen to be have exactly two marginal couplings. They're arranged such that the gauge couplings of both simple factors in the gauge group on the left are marginal, and then they have various dual descriptions in terms of these non-Lagrangian type theories on the right. So in this list here, we found, you'll see the E6, E7, and E8 theories from the Kodaira classification appearing. But there are some other theories, the SP5, SP3, plus SU2, and one example of something which we couldn't actually pin down the gauge group, but we know it's not E6. I didn't mean gauge group, I meant a flavor group. It's actually probably a rank 2 flavor group here. These conformal theories are not in the Kodaira classification, or rather, the better way of saying it is, if we turn off the masses, they share the same type of singularity on the Coulomb branch as, respectively, the E6, E7, and E8 conformal field theories, but they have different flavor groups than were the ones that had been found 10 years ago by Minahan and Nemeshansky and the people who flow down in string theories. Seiberg and Morrison and Ori Dinor.
In the bottom half, sometimes there are two answers. Does that mean
Oh, well, because...
Can you engage groups of infinite coupling?
Yeah, so I have two gauge couplings, and I can go to the infinite coupling limit in one or the other gauge coupling. And each of them will have their own dual descriptions. And if the two gauge groups are not the same, or don't have matter that comes in a symmetric way between the two of them, those two infinite coupling limits could have different looking duals. And you can also ask the question, what's sort of the double dual when they both become strongly coupled? And that's actually pretty difficult. Question for us to answer in the just using the data, the sort of the group theory and central charge data that we are using here, but it's something that can be answered in principle.
Maybe you can say this later, but did you make the moduli spaces of the original theory and its weakly coupled dual description?
Yes, I mean, This description of what the gauge groups are, what the matter content is, what the global symmetries, you can get just by matching the low energy effective actions on the moduli space. That includes, in particular, the metric on the moduli spaces. So it's not just the rank, the dimension that they match, it's actually the geometry of the moduli spaces that they match on both sides. That's actually, in the case where you have this data, for these field theories, so you solve for the Seibert-Witten for the low energy effective actions, then you can do the detailed matching, and it's, that has more than enough data to completely pin down all the parameters. So this is what I said: we found the
things which new conformal field theories which share the same singularity as the EN theories, but they have different global symmetries and different central charges, as I'll mention in a minute. So I'll talk more about these a little bit later in the talk, but these came as a bit of a surprise. So this is the part that I was going to skip. This is an example going through looking at the Seibert-Witten curves and so forth, but let's not do that. Okay. I'm sorry. Okay. So, as I've said, for all of this to work, we're using these isolated superconformal field theories as matter under the Lagrangian gauge group that we're weakly gauging part of the flavor symmetry. That is to say, we're coupling the gauge bosons of that G-twiddle weakly coupled group to the conserved currents of the flavor symmetry. So these have to contribute, the conformal field theory is going to contribute something to the beta function of those G-twiddle gauge bosons. And the way to compute that is the contribution to the beta function will come from the two-point function of those gauge bosons. They're coupled to this flavor current. So the thing that controls the contribution to the beta function is the two-point function of flavor currents. That is to say, it's going to be the scalar part in a flavor current OPE. This thing is just the central charge in the global flavor current algebra of this conformal field theory. So for all this to work, these central charges have to take specific values. And so we actually, in this way, by taking one particular case, like here's the SU3 with the 6-3s, where we knew the Seibert-Witten data, so we could pin everything down. We now know that we find that this must have an appropriate central charge for this to be this SU2 factor to have a marginal coupling. So we've determined the central charge in the E6 flavor algebra. And once we know it here, we can input it every place else that E6 appears. And now these other ones all become checks, right? So we've learned in this sort of indirect way how to compute a new observable in these isolated superconformal field theory, this current algebra central charge. maybe it's worth saying that this argument is a bit reminiscent of a Tuft anomaly matching, where you have, say, some nice ultraviolet description of the theory, and you can compute some, in that case, it's some three-point functions or something, whatever the Tuft anomaly is. But then you know that by coupling, weakly coupling in some extra matter, and then flowing down in the RG group, because the weakly coupled stuff doesn't flow, it gives the same sort of canceling contribution. So you knew that the value of the Tuft anomaly in whatever the low energy theory was the same. This is a very similar argument. Basically, what we're doing here, though, instead of flowing down in the RG group, is we're changing a marginal deformation. But again, we're kind of tracking or getting control over the central charges by weakly gauging it, coupling it weakly to some gauge theory degrees of freedom, and then changing the coupling. Okay, well.
So in some sense, the way how you fix the central charge by requiring that the beta function of the weakly coupled factor is zero.
Right.
But how should I think about this? So in principle, central charge is coupling independent, right? So this is just a property of OIM.
This is the contribution to the beta function from the conformal field theory. So if I know this thing, then this is what enters into computing the.
So this is for the would be for the SU2 in your example.
Well,
so
these are the E6 currents.
Okay.
And this is the central charge of the E6 current algebra of the E6 conformal field theory. Now, when I now couple my gauge fields to a certain SU2 subgroup, well, there might be a little group theory factor I have to work out, but there'll be a group theory factor times K, which gives a contribution to the
So this K is related to the to this superconformal, isolated superconformal fixed point.
Oh, right.
And okay, so then my question is, I guess not. Doesn't make sense because it's isolated, so I cannot change a coupling. So this is just like a characteristic of this theory, isn't it?
Okay. Right. So we use
that's
this
why you can use it the same
by coupling in extra stuff. We used it to deduce the characteristic of the isolated conformal theory. So I put this in quotes because I left out the space-time indices, right? And so I haven't actually written. I've just given the sense of how this operator product expansion looks like, but this you have to worry about all the various you have to worry about Lorentz invariants and so forth as well. So, but it should be reminiscent, say, of current algebra as two dimensional. There are other central charges appearing in. In the conformal algebra, in four dimensions there end up being two. The C, which appears as sort of a central charge in the TT OPE, and another one A that appears with a certain length contraction in three-point functions of T's. So again, there's quotes here, so this should be taken with a grain of salt. This is a way of writing it with the appropriate. Again, if you put in Lorentz indices. The A and C, it's known now, can be computed by a Tuft anomaly matching for the R symmetries of the theories. And this works in many cases, as long as you're not in an unfortunate situation where the R symmetry in the infrared in your theory turns out to be an accidental symmetry. And following, you know, the work of various people, Johansson, Anselmi, Friedman, Intrilligator, Weck, the A is now believed to be kind of the analog of C in two dimensions. It decreases along RG flows. This hasn't been proven, but I think it's very strong evidence for it. So these things can also be computed using our techniques in addition to the Atufdenom matching. At least, I think I should back up. I think actually C is the one that can be computed in this way as well. And we find matching results for the C central charge to the ones that are computed by the Atuft anomaly matching condition. And we also find, sort of interestingly, by looking through that list of theories that I had before, some patterns which we don't have any explanation for. All known theories have a certain relation between the A and C central charges. And it's not clear whether is this a general property of N equals two conformal field theories, or is this a coincidence, something that happened just because of the way of the methods that we're using, and we're only picking out a special subclass of these theories. The DI here are the dimensions of those of the U's of the scalar multiplets whose values parameterize the Coulomb branch. So this is actually sort of an interesting, and from the point of, if this is true, this is sort of interesting from the point of view of the A theorem, in that A is decreasing, but we know examples where C can decrease or increase. However, in all known examples, the D's, well, this sum of the set of D's under RG flows, this right-hand side seems to decrease. And so the question may be whether this puts bounds on how C can vary as well. So all of this leads to the following hope, which is now that we have a large sort of detailed understanding of a large set of N equals two superconformal field theories and how they're related to each other, and a lot of information about how they flow from one to the other under relevant deformations, which I'll get to in a second. It might be time to try looking at the systematics of the operator product expansions of these conformal field theories. This is something which hasn't been done, mostly because it's a lot of work to work out the constraints of N equals two superconformal symmetry on, you know, you want to arrange this thing in terms of superfields and supermultiplets. And you have to work out a framework to do this in the superconformal theory. But there has been some work on this in over the past decade, and there are some results and the beginning of a framework that's coming out. But doing that, then you can start playing the similar games as we're probably familiar with from two-dimensional conformal field theory. You can do analogs of the Sugawara construction. We know that the energy momentum tensor appears on the right-hand side of the OPE of two of the currents in our current algebra. If we then assume that no other fields exist, then we can use this as a or only certain other fields exist and subtract them out, then we can use this as a definition of the energy momentum tensor in terms of the currents, right? And that which is what we did in two dimensions, that's the so-called Sugawara construction, where the energy momentum tensor is some kind of normal ordered bilinear in the currents. And then knowing the current algebra OPEs, you can deduce things like the central charges, and you get a special set of theories in which there's a nice relationship between the central charge, the C central charge, and the K, the central charge in the current algebra. There will presumably be analogs of this in four dimensions as well. And you can do this, and now you can ask, do we actually see such theories in our lists of N equals two conformal field theories? And of course, you want to look at OP to crossing symmetry in four-point functions and so forth as well. So let me talk a little bit about relevant deformations. I'll only actually talk about this puzzle that I mentioned before, which is that the traditional classification of the rank one conformal field theories, whose Seiberg-Witten curves are given by this Kodaira classification, If you set all these m's that appeared here to zero, these curves are very simple. You know, y squared equals x cubed plus basically u to the fifth. That's the so-called E8 singularity, and so forth. And the point is that you do look at the most general complex deformation of these singularities, and they're parametrized by these complex parameters, the m's. If you look at them, these m's have precisely their subscripts are their mass dimension. They have the dimensions of the adjoint Casimirs of the E8 algebra. And so it's a, there's this, from the math point of view, there's this somewhat mysterious connection between these curves and this Lie algebra, these Lie algebras on the right hand side. From the, there is now a very pleasing explanation of this from the field theory point of view. To each of these singularities corresponds a known field theory or superconformal field theory, and these algebras are simply the global symmetry algebras, the flavor algebras of those field theories. So these I call the maximal deformations. And what we found is that for these theories, there are other deformations, somehow inequivalent deformations of these same singularities, a different way of turning on these masses, such that instead of having E8, E7, and E6, we have things like SP5, SP3, cross SP1, and so forth. A different inequivalent mass deformations. For Lagrangian field theories, the existence of inequivalent mass deformations of the same singularity or the same sort of conformal fixed point is not at all mysterious. It just the scaling behavior near the conformal point is in some sense heuristically something like describing what the gauge degrees of freedom at the fixed point are, and the deformations tells you about the matter, right? So you can imagine cases where you have the same gauge group, but you can put in different matter in order to make it scale invariant. So here's a simple example. SU2 with four doublets is scale invariant. It's described by the D4 singularity. And you can just read off from the Lagrangian, it has an SL8 flavor symmetry, hence matching with this D4 name. But the same singularity also describes the SU2 theory with a single triplet hypermultiplet. This is the field content of the n equals 4 SU2 theory. It has an SP1 flavor symmetry once, that's a little bit of a misnomer, but, well, okay.
It's really
this SP1 together with the U2 R symmetry is enlarged in SO6 R symmetry of the n equals 4 theory when the masses is turned off. But turning on the n equals 2 mass, so you break it down to n equals 2, what you're doing is breaking the SP1 flavor symmetry. So this is a Lagrangian example. However, in the cases of these isolated fixed point theories, like these H's and these E's, where we don't have a Lagrangian description, we can't fall back on the Lagrangian to figure out the different mass deformations. We have to understand somehow from the low energy theory what makes inequivalent mass deformations and how we can learn about them. And this is something which is work in progress, I guess. It's not well understood how to do this. And I guess I'd like to conclude with just a few words on the relation to string constructions. So Ofer, Aharoni, and Tachikawa computed the central charges, including the current algebra central charges, of the EN conformal field theories using their F theory realization, really the F theory realization. There's a sort of a large N version of it that was worked out by Aharoni, Maldacena, Fayazuddin, thanks. And so they were able to compute these central charges using the ADS-CFT correspondence, but then also were able to argue that the answers they got were not true just in large N, but were true for all N. And so used them to compute the central charges of the EN conformal field theories. And their answers for E6 and E7 matched what we found, and they also predicted an answer for E8, which we then John Wittig and I were able to confirm use in that scan of theories that I mentioned before. A puzzle, though, given by these submaximal mass deformations is, so there are other conformal field theories. How are those realized in this similar F-theory construction? If this is presumably, the F-theory constructions are very closely related to those Kodaira classification of singularities that I wrote down before. So presumably the answer to how you understand the mass deformations in the Kodaira classification might also give us some clues as to what subtleties were missing in these, in interpreting F-theory compactifications in string theory. Or the answer may simply be that string theory does not realize those. That's also an interesting answer, right? We now that we have a large class of these field theories, we can ask the question, can we embed them all in string theory, or are some not realizable in string theory? Or some, what's it called, in the swampland or something. So another way of getting at these n equals 2 conformal field theories and string theories was through these 2A brain realizations that Witten introduced, which these Hanani-Witten constructions, which was D4 brains suspended between NS5 brains in various backgrounds. The problem with those is if you say, well, can't we look at those and ask them to give us information about what happens to this infinite coupling limit? Well, if you look in the 2A picture in the brain construction, the infinite coupling limit is when those 5 brains are becoming coincident. And that's just a strongly coupled configuration in the 2A theory, and it doesn't help you. It just gives a singularity, and you don't know how to interpret it. And if you lift to M theory, the 4 brains and the 5 brains become just one big M5 brain, and it turns out that the strong coupling, the infinite coupling limit, again, corresponds to coincident M5 brains in M theory. And again, you lose, you've gone to a strongly coupled configuration even in M theory, and so you don't have any information. Well, Justin and I have found a different 2A construction which can be lifted to M theory, which has the nice property that as you go to the infinite coupling limit, even though it becomes a strongly coupled configuration in the 2A theory, its M theory lift remains weakly coupled. You don't get coincident 5 brains there. The trick is to look at constructions where you have Nevesworth's 5 brains sort of intersecting orbifold 6 planes, the O6 minus planes in a certain configuration. These have been looked at. They have a fairly long history of people having looked at them. We just realized that there was a simple way of doing the M theory lift of these configurations, which turned out to be nice and smooth. And so, in particular, you can find what you get in M theory. You can just read off the Seiberg-Witten curve of that conformal field of the isolated conformal field theory that you get as a factor of the theory when you go to the strong coupling, the infinite coupling limit. And from the two, you can ask what did those isolated fixed points look like in the 2A string description? It turns out that they are a new strongly coupled configuration in 2A string theory, which is a bound state of an NS5 brain intersecting an O6 minus plane. I mean, one where the charges are such that you would think that you would be allowed to move the NS5 brain off the O6 minus, but we say that in addition, we have found that there's another configuration, which is a bound state. It does not have a deformation parameter where you can move the NS5 off the O6 minus. Those are the 2A string configurations which correspond to the superconformal field theories. And as I mentioned earlier, using this construction, we get examples of theories where you have all the limits, all the singular points on the space of marginal couplings have these non-Lagrangian type descriptions. So this paper should hopefully with Justin should come out soon, within a month, hopefully weeks. So, to summarize, here are at least some questions that I've raised during the talk that I think are interesting. One is understanding the systematics of mass deformations of n equals 2 conformal fixed points. We're obviously not understanding a subtlety having to do with the fact that there can be multiple independent mass deformations. I just mentioned about the string constructions, and then there's this hope that this something like the conformal bootstrap program could be applied, or maybe doesn't have to be that ambitious, but something like that, a systematic, I guess I should say, that the systematic study of the OPEs of n equals 2 conformal field theory seems to be in order. Thanks.
Okay, let's thank the speaker again.